Hello again, and welcome to Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Polly Pocket.
She's Jean Marie, and Ron will not be here today. Today, we are going to look ahead, not just at the next new drug or device, but at how the entire landscape of medicine may change over the next decade. We're calling this episode The Next Decade in Medicine. I'm so swift. We'll talk about artificial intelligence, stem cells, regenerative medicine, genomics, and precision medicine, wearables, and home-based care, and how all of this could change what it really feels like to be a patient and a partner in the healthcare system.
Are we going to talk about that thing that goes in the toilet that kind of creeped me out?
I don't know.
Okay. Why do we want to talk about this episode about the next decade of medicine or in forecasting the future?
Because things are moving incredibly fast.
Okay.
Just like that kid on that, who was it?
In the movie?
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller's Day.
Ferris Bueller. Things are moving incredibly fast. 10 years ago, a lot of what we're going to talk about, AI and everyday clinical care, deep gene sequencing, more realistic stem cell-based therapies were either experimental or barely in use. Now these tools are starting to show up in real clinics, and in the next 10 years, they're likely to move from specialty centers into more routine care. And the decisions that we make now as patients, families, clinicians, and voters will shape whether these changes actually make care more humane and more fair, or whether they just add more complexity and inequality. So it's not just a tech episode, it's about the future of being a patient. Let's start with the big buzzword, artificial intelligence, or AI. What role is AI likely to play in medicine over the next decade? Experts see AI less as a replacement for clinicians and more as a co-pilot, a tool that can help with pattern recognition, documentation, and managing enormous amounts of data. That might mean intercepting scans.
Interpreting scans.
Oh, helping interpret scans, flagging lab and abnormalities, summarizing records, or suggesting possible diagnoses and treatment options for the clinician to review.
One big near-term use is reducing paperwork and burnout. AI systems can help draft visit notes, sort through messages, and pull key information from a patient's electronic record so that the clinician doesn't have to spend hours clicking through screens. And when it works well, then it could free up time for actual human conversation during appointments.
We're also seeing AI in imaging, helping radiologists spot tiny abnormalities in scans that might otherwise be missed. They're also seeing AI in pathology, analyzing slides for subtle patterns in tissue samples. They can also help with risk prediction, identifying patients at high risk for things like sepsis, readmission, or complications, so teams can act earlier. But it's always meant to be decision support, not let the machine decide everything. There's also AI in drug discovery and research, systems that scan huge chemical libraries and biological data to suggest new molecules or new uses for existing drugs, which could speed up how quickly we get those new treatments.
Well, let's talk about the upside and some of the concerns. What are the potential benefits and what should our listeners be wary of? On the positive side, faster, more accurate detection of some conditions when humans and AI work together, less administration burden for clinicians, which could mean less burnout and more attention and time for patients, more personalized care as AI helps integrate data from labs, imaging, genomics, wearables, and other tools into more meaningful insights, but there's the risk side.
On the risk side, mm-hmm. there's big concerns about bias and fairness. If AI systems are trained on data that underrepresent certain groups by race, ethnicity, gender, disability, or geography, they can make less accurate or less safe recommendations for those patients. There are also issues of privacy and data security. With so much of our health information is being processed and analyzed, that's got to be a concern.
And not all tools work for all people. For example, when it comes to how dark someone's skin, that can affect how a pulse oximeter works and whether they get an accurate reading. So there's things like that that have to be taken into consideration. And we can't forget about the human side. If clinicians rely too heavily on AI or feel pressured to go with an algorithm, patients might feel like the decisions are less personal. And shared decision-making becomes even more important when AI is in the room. Patients should still be part of the conversation and know what the risks, benefits are, and also that their values are being taken into consideration. Over the next decades, we may need strong rules and oversight to make sure that AI is transparent, accountable, and tested across diverse patient groups, and not just rolled out because it's exciting.
Right. Let's move to another big area.
Okay.
Stem cells and regenerative medicine.
Okay.
We did a whole episode on stem cells, yep. But what might the next decade look like? Stem cell therapy has already proven itself in some areas, like bone marrow transplants for blood cancers, and research has expanded into heart, neurological, and autoimmune conditions. The recent work with induced pluripotent stem cells, or iPSCs, adult cells that are reprogrammed into stem cells, opens doors for patient-specific cells that can be turned into many tissues without using embryonic cells.
And looking ahead, researchers see a few likely directions for this particular field. Better, safer protocols using stem cells to repair heart tissue or cartilage or even spinal cord injuries. Stem cell-based treatments for some neurodegenerative diseases might be on the horizon, like Parkinson's or certain forms of vision loss, where early clinical studies are already underway, and lab-grown mini organs or organelles or organoids used to test drugs or personalized treatment, which would be wonderful because you could eliminate other potential laboratory testing.
Well, stem cells also tie into precision medicine. Using a person's own cells, sometimes edited with tools like CRISPR, to correct certain genetic problems or rebuild damaged tissue. That could lead to more tailored therapies with fewer rejection issues, but it raises ethical and safety questions that we'll still be grappling with in 10 years. We should also say clearly that the field is promising, but it's not magic. There are still unregulated clinics offering stem cell cures without solid evidence or FDA approval, and that's likely to continue. As well as real, well-tested therapies mature over the next decade, the challenge will be helping patients distinguish legitimate clinical trials and approved treatments from unsafe offerings.
And we've mentioned precision medicine a few times. What might that look like by in the year 3000?
No, 2030s.
In the next 10 years or
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Precision medicine uses information about an individual's genes, environment, or lifestyle to tailor prevention and treatment. And in the future and beyond, experts might expect genetic testing to become routine for many conditions, not just for rare diseases or for specific cancers. Electronic health records that can store genomic data and automatically flag drug gene interactions for pharma
pharmacogenomics, I guess.
And the more frequent use of cell-free DNA and other molecular tests for cancer screening and monitoring.
And the cost for sequencing a whole genome has dropped from thousands of dollars to hundreds of dollars in that range, and it's projected to keep falling, potentially making it much more accessible. Large population studies combining genomic, lifestyle, and health record data are helping scientists understand how genes and the environment interact, leading to better risk predictions.
And at the same time, there's a push to make this research more diverse. Right now, a lot of gene-based data overrepresents people from examples like from people of European ancestry, which can leave other groups out. So over the next decade, there's a big effort, hopefully, to include more diverse populations so that precision medicine doesn't widen health disparities, so it's more inclusive. For patients, this could mean more tailored drug choices, more targeted cancer treatments, and a better understanding of an individual's risk. And it also requires careful counseling and including, you know, privacy is huge when it comes to all of this. How does insurance come into play? And what is the emotional impact of obtaining genetic information?
Right. Well, another trend is care moving out of the hospitals and into homes. How are wearables and remote technology going to play into the next decade? We're already seeing smartwatches and patches that monitor heart rate, rhythm, oxygen levels, activity, sleep, glucose levels. They're likely to expand into more continuous monitoring of blood pressure, glucose, and other metrics in high-risk patients. Connected devices can send alerts to clinicians or care teams if a patient's data suggests a concerning trend, sometimes before symptoms are obvious.
Yeah, like you were doing at-home EKGs, and then they were being transmitted to your cardiologist. And so they were getting real-time feedback on a regular basis.
Right.
There's also the concept of hospital at home, where some patients who would normally be admitted can receive hospital-level care at home with remote monitoring, home nursing visits, and rapid response teams. And this could reduce hospital-acquired complications and illnesses and make recovery more comfortable and more timely for some people.
Over the next decade, we might see more integrated platforms where data from wearables, home devices, and clinic visits all feed into one system. More behavioral nudges, like apps that are encouraging movement or medication adherence or healthy sleep patterns based on real-time data. But again, there are questions about data overload, privacy, and making sure clinicians aren't overwhelmed by constant alerts.
Yeah, I know one of my applications that I utilize gives me nudges like, you know, your protein or your fiber levels for the day are a bit low, and then it makes recommendations for my next meal. So it's, you know, a lot of tech. Mm-hmm. Telemedicine exploded during the pandemic, but what does it look like in the coming decade? Most experts think that we're heading towards a more hybrid model where some visits are in person and some are virtual, and they're based on what is needed. I'll never forget Lita's appointment at telemedicine, and she said she had a sore throat, and then she proceeded to show the clinician her mouth over the phone. It didn't play out well. Routine follow-ups, medication checks, mental health visits, and some rehabilitation services can be done by video or by phone or with applications, while physical exams, procedures, and complex assessments still need to be in person.
Right. This can especially help people who live far away from specialists or have mobility challenges or have caregiving responsibilities that make travel difficult. But it depends on broadband access, tech literacy, and insurance coverage. So equity will be a big question in how telehealth evolves. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about these exciting tools, but we have to talk about who benefits, because technology could widen gaps if we're not careful.
Right. The future of medicine will run on data. So from electronic records, genetic sequencing, wearables, imaging, and more. And if this data mainly comes from well-resourced urban populations, then AI models, risk scores, and treatments become less accurate for the everyday person or for everyone else. That's why there's a push for larger, more representative cohorts and global collaboration that intentionally include underrepresented communities so that, that you know, you're getting a more global picture.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the need to respect privacy, get meaningful consent, and make sure that communities actually benefit from research done with their data.
Well, trust is going to be crucial. If people don't trust how their data is used, or they've already experienced discrimination in healthcare, they may understandably hesitate to participate in these new systems. Building the next decade in medicine has to include building trust and fairness, not just new gadgets.
And let's bring it all back down to earth. 10 years from now, what might a typical patient experience feel like? Imagine this, a big fluffy cloud. Your health system app reminds you of an upcoming visit that already happens. Before your appointment, you fill out a simple questionnaire online. Already do it. Your wearable shares your recent heart rate, sleep, activity level, and diet with your clinician. Yep, they were there. And then at your visit, I guess I am, you know, in a very lucky, you know, I have all the
bells and whistles.
Yeah. So I guess it is a disparity issue. And then at the visit, whether it's in person or virtual, your clinician has an AI-generated summary of your recent labs, imaging, and specialty care provider notes, so they're not scrambling to find that information.
Yeah. I mean, that saves them time right there.
Right.
If you need a medication, the system will check your genetics, if available, and your other meds to choose a drug that and a dose that's more likely to work for you with fewer side effects. If you're high risk for a complication, a risk prediction tool might alert your team to follow you more closely or enroll you in a hospital at home or a remote monitoring program.
If you have are living with cancer or a rare disease, your tumor or cells might be analyzed using genetic sequencing and molecular tools to pick targeted therapies and treatments, or even stem cell-based gene-edited options, if those are available and appropriate. And throughout, we hope that shared decision-making will be part of the norm. You're then asked about your goals and if the tech is there to support that conversation and hopefully not to replace it.
Well, while we wait for this future to fully arrive, mm-hmm. what can our listeners start asking now?
Okay.
Well, you might ask your clinicians, are there digital tools, apps, or remote options that could help manage my condition?
Yeah, I know like there's, for example, apps for physical therapy before a procedure and after a procedure that can cut down on travel time, improve overall outcome, and things of that nature.
Okay, good example. Are there clinical trials or newer treatments such as stem cell-based or targeted therapies that I might qualify for? And how is my data being used and protected? Can I control what is shared and with whom?
And if you're offered something AI-related, like an AI-assisted screening result, you can ask, how does this tool work in general terms? Has it been tested in people like me? And what happens if I disagree with your clinical judgment?
And if you're considering genomic testing or advanced therapies, you could ask about the benefits and the limits of some of the information, how it might affect your family members, what it costs, what the insurance coverage will be, and privacy protections.
So what do we hope the next decade of medicine will look like? I'm guessing a cartoon like the future of kitchens in cartoons.
The Jetsons.
I hope we see more precision and less guesswork, but also more humanity and an acknowledgement that data and AI tools are tools and not oracles. And I hope that access to these advances is more evenly shared and not reserved only for the most privileged.
Yes, I'd like to see a future where all of this technology actually gives clinicians more space to be human, to listen, to comfort, to explain, because some of the busy work has been offloaded to machines. And where treatments like stem cells and precision therapies move from headline hype to safe, realistic options for more people.
And I think most of all, we hope that you, patients and caregivers, are not just passengers on this ride, but also partners in shaping where it's going.
Thank you all for joining us for this episode of Podcast DX, The Next Decade in Medicine.
Betson's version.
What?
Nothing.
Okay. We covered a lot today. AI as a clinical co-pilot, stem cells, regenerative medicine, genomics and precision care, wearables and home-based monitoring, and the importance of equity and trust as all of this evolves. As always, remember that new doesn't automatically mean better for everyone. Talk with your care team about which technologies make sense in your situation and move at the pace that feels right and safe for you.
And as always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or a qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have and before regarding a medical condition or treatment. And before changing anything, never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.